I have Sonny Osborne on the line. I've been having phone trouble, but I now have found Sonny. He says I'm sounding a little funny on the phone, so I'm assuming I need a new phone. How you doing, Sonny?
I'm doing okay. You know, Tony Trish, you can't trust him. I wouldn't worry about it. He's just one of those guys, you know. He's a Avengers player, first of all. And secondly, he talks to Anal Fred, so you know he can't be all there.
Well, I'm just gonna assume that he ran into the same problem you did. I probably have a voicemail from him, or it could just be the banjo player thing. You know, sometimes it just kind of throws you off a little bit. How you doing? You're sounding good, man. You're sounding full of energy and ready to go.
Well, I'm okay. Yeah, it's just hot here today, and I'm fixing to go down that stupid bicycle 5 miles.
You avoiding the same, and a couple years ago you got hit by a car. Are you off of that road now? Are you taking another tour or what?
Yeah, I go, that's a weird feeling to be on a bicycle and get hit by a car.
Well, yeah.
The car doesn't give at all. I mean, when it hits you, you just go the other way. And the car just nothing. It's just,
you know what, you and I have talked about that before, but nobody listening has heard that story, and I have to laugh at it because knowing how you react to things, I can't remember how many cars, how many cruisers were there, and how many ambulances were there, but...
Oh, man, there were two police cruisers, and there's a fire truck, and an ambulance, and it just really surprised me because it knocked me down, and it knocked me off the bicycle and knocked me down, but it didn't hurt anything. And Bill Boy he was not even moving. He was moving a little bit, but I mean, he was stopped at a light, and I started to go through, and he was looking the other way, and so he took off, and he ran into me and knocked me down. And I'm telling you, within 2 or 3 minutes, there's two cop cars killed, there were the lights on. And I thought, man, they're going to put me in jail or something. and then the old boy was driving that car, got out, and he was scared to death. He probably didn't have any insurance, but he was really his fight. Hey, man, you okay? Yeah. So, I'm as good as I could be. You just saw me down, but other than that, that's the first time, won't be the last time. So, anyway, but everything was all right. And I asked that police lady, she kept on saying, do you want to go to the hospital? Do you want to go to the hospital? I said, no, I don't. Well, maybe we should take you to the hospital. I said, I'm not going to the hospital. Period. And I said, I've got a question for you. What's a firefighter doing here? And I said, I don't know why the fire department is here. They got that truck out, ran that big diesel engine, and drove from the fire department over here and for nothing. And she said, well, by law, we have to call the fire department, and an ambulance has to come. And she said, and then if there's an accident, the fire department cleans up. Anyway, so.
Well, maybe they knew who the guy hit who was riding the bicycle, and they thought they ought to come and hose you down.
Could be. Somebody thought I was on fire or something.
Or that you was going to whoop some fire.
Yeah, that's it. Three wise men were farming. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, the three wise men were farming because it says in the Bible they came from a farm.
I got to check that when we get off of here. I can Google that. I got a Bible right here handy. I'll check that out.
And it came in a Honda car.
Yeah.
They came in one accord.
And for people that don't know, you're out riding your bike to rehab after that stroke and whatnot. And so you ride your bike and
I
watch your diet.
That, 7 or 8 years ago, 7 years, I guess, it's been now.
Yeah.
And I ride anywhere from 5 to 10 miles. I was riding 15 miles a day, but then I had knee problems and I had to quit that. So I'm down not there about 5 miles a day now, mm-hmm. which is okay.
That's good. It helps. Somebody had a question for you last week, and I forgot because we started talking about John Hartford, which was just some amazing insight that you shared. Someone wanted to know what you thought about maybe some difficulties with current bands, if we're talking about current bluegrass bands without naming any. And is their harmony singing maybe affected by never having experienced one microphone or having to sing that close to each other? I don't know if we talked about that or not. Do you have any opinions on that?
Well, not exactly. What do you mean?
Well, because so many of them today, I guess the bands, they don't have to sing right next to each other, I think is what the question was intended towards. Someone asked me to ask you in the chat room last week, and I forgot that the newer bands, not having the head to sing around one microphone, does it affect their ability to really sing tight harmonies because they've never had to be that close?
If you use one mic, it's really different. You know what? The best sound that this style, bluegrass style music can have is with no microphone at all. Absolutely none. Because everybody is forced to play lighter until it's their turn, and everybody is forced to sing on key a lot better than if you've got a lot of noise going on. And this day and time, they're using, you know, and they have been for a long time. Well, we did it for a while. We used more than one mic, but we finally got back to where we just sang on one mic and played on one mic, and the music was a whole lot tighter. It's a different animal, though, because you have to pay more attention to the guys that's standing next to you, and it's a lot easier if you follow the guy's mouth. If you watch, pick out one guy in the group that is really a good singer, like in our group, my brother, and everybody, both the guys would actually watch his mouth, and you would stay right with him a whole lot better than if you're on several mics, because to sing on several mics and really get the harmony close and right, exactly right, is very hard to do. And but I don't know, the new groups, David Minson, I've never seen them perform, but they sound awfully good. The Grassroots sang on, I think they sang on one mic, I think.
Hmm.
And then they played on multiple mics, but I think they sang on one mic, and their harmony is excellent. Absolutely, just very good.
So for all the sound engineers out there, you think it sounds better if they have nothing?
That's what I said, yeah.
So for all the sound engineers out there, you think the music is better with without all of the microphones and all the equipment?
Who are you referring to as a sound engineer?
Well, the guy who sits back there and slides all the knobs back and forth.
Yeah. And you know what?
Yeah, I do. I do know. Go ahead.
Most of those people have no clue on how to operate, what to do. I had argument after argument after argument with sound guys until we hired Jerry Williamson to do sound for us. And from then until he left the group, it was perfect. He knew exactly what we wanted. He knew how to get it out of the sound system. I remember we played Telluride. That's what y'all call that. And that board must have been, my goodness, 20 feet long. And I mean, I would look at it and I thought, you know, I don't know anything about this, but Jerry, and the guys, well, I'll go back a little bit. The guys that were there that was running the sound were having all kinds of problems. They were doing okay, but they were having problems because they had too much going on. And Jerry sat down there, when we went on, he sat down there, and he used, I think, three or five channels out of about, I'd say, 50, maybe. And it just one little end of the board, that's where he sat. And he told me later, the one guy looked at him, he said, "Is that all you're going to use?" And he said, "Yep, that's all I need." And I did notice that about a third of the way in our show, I looked up there at him, and all these sound guys were standing around watching him do that, and he was just on four or five channels. That's all he was using, and just got excellent sound. I mean, and you could hear it in Telluride. You could hear it coming back at you because it goes out and then it hits a mountain or something back there and comes back at you, and it was right on the money. He was doing such a good job. But if a lot of people would invest in a sound guy, or have one guy that knows what he's doing, or either, I'll tell you one thing, and we tried to do this. I know I'm talking in circles, but I do that a lot.
It's okay.
When Bobby's son, Robbie, was with us, Rob was an electronics genius. Now, he still is, but he was an electronics genius. And he put together a sound system for us. He built the speakers. There were a copy of the old A7 cabinet, and they were really good, and we could get all the volume in the world. And we had it in our contract that we purchased our own sound system. And if the house system wanted a feed, we give them one line, and that's all they got. They got the finished product, and they couldn't do anything other than turn it up to turn it down, and they had no choice. And so what we did was Rob built a little soundboard that we kept on the stage with us, and it had five or six channels. I can't remember exactly which, but we used that soundboard, and we could turn ourselves up or down, each guy. I mean, if the banjo was too low, we'd go over there and turn it up a little bit. If the guitar was too loud, we'd turn it down a little bit. And we did that for the longest time, and it would really make the guys in the building, it would really make them mad because they didn't have any control. The only thing they could do was turn the whole thing. That's all they got was one line. And it had everything in it. And all they could do was turn it up or turn it down. And that worked to perfection with us. And we used it in big auditoriums, too. The place in Louisville. And it was, I'll say this, it was good enough. Let's say that Freedom Hall in Louisville. And I think Conway Twitty was on the show. And I think it was 8 or 10 people on the show. But Carl Mahaney was running the show because he was the promoter. And we used that system. And, I mean, man, we got a standing ovation when we get done. And we closed, like, the first half of the show. And Conway went to Carlton, and he said, "Whatever sound system they used, I want to use that, too." Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there was something like 16,000 people there, and our system wasn't here to cover that many people, but we could give the house that one line there, and that covered the whole group of them well. And so Carlton came to me and asked, he said, "Conway wants to use your system, is that okay?" I said, "Well, of course, Julie can, you know," sir. And he used it for that, to like that many people, and it was just perfect. It was so good. But then after Rob left, we stopped carrying a sound system because there's just too much hassle to get there. We had to get there before everybody else, and then we had to leave after everybody else was done. And so we didn't want to take the time and the effort, so we decided to put up with the crappy sound that whatever they gave us. So anyway.
It does answer some of them. You know, I heard a story once. I don't know if you told this or I heard from someone else that you had Raymond standing next to a sound guy once.
Yeah, we sure did.
Yeah.
I tell you what we actually did. Raymond would set his concession stand up directly in front of the stage, although he'd be 150, 200 feet back in front, but he was directly in front of the stage. And when he would sit back there and listen to us, and he knew exactly what we were going to do. He knew just what we wanted, and he would point to a certain thing and make it up or down. And like if the dobro was too loud, he would make like dobro, or he would number the mic and say like not mic number four is too low, and then we'd ask the sound guy, would you please turn mic number four up a little bit? And that worked pretty good too. They never got onto it, I don't think. I'll be honest with you, it was between the act and the sound guy. It was always, not always, I would say 80%, 85% of the time, it was like a contest. And it shouldn't have been, but it was. It was like a contest on seeing if they could run the sound the way that it should be, the way they heard it. Well, that's not the point. The point is that you want the sound the way you want it. And then if there's a complaint or anything like that, it's you that gets it. But I can't tell you how many times, turn the banjo up, turn the fiddle down, turn the fiddle up, and on and on. And finally we just got to say, you see that guy sitting up back there, go back there and tell him that. And tell him that, tell him the fiddle's too low, or the banjo's too high, or whatever. You go tell him, because we can't do a thing about it. We're his mercy.
The story that I heard is that you had Raymond standing next to the sound guy, and you were having a fit with the sound guy that night. And I don't know the venue, so I don't remember that. But it was you were telling the guy what to do and turn this and do this, and now don't touch it, or that guy standing next to you is going to break your fingers.
Oh, that was at West Virginia somewhere. I remember that. This guy was believing himself because he wouldn't do anything. He would say, turn the guitar up, it's too low, nobody can hear it. The lead singer, Terry's mic is too low, we can't hear him. And he would make like he was turning it up, but he did nothing because it sounded good to him, and that's the way we should sound, he thought.
Mm-hmm.
And they were went down there and stood beside him, and I told him, I did say that, I said, if you don't do exactly what you're told to do up here, because I said, as long as we're on this stage, we're the boss. We own this whole thing here. And I said, if I tell you what to do and you don't do it, you see that guy on your left back there, and he come and turned up, and they were 6'4", at about 270, 280, something like that. And I mean, an awesome man. And for the gentleman on top of that, and I said, if you don't turn it up, that guy back there is going to break your neck. How about that now? And they were just standing there with them overalls on, looking at this guy. It was funny. It was funny to us, but I'm sure it wasn't funny to that guy. But he did what he wanted to at all. And I told him before, we would go across the stage. Okay, turn this back up. And then the fiddle would say, turn that one down. And only across there, and I'd say, now, I want to see both hands and both feet at the same time all during our show. I don't want you to touch anything from zero. And they just stay mad at me all the time. But, I mean, that's our livelihood, you know? That sound that comes out of there is what's going to sell you or what makes where you, it makes the decision whether you come back next year or not. And so, just like I told that guy, as long as we're on the stage, we own it. We own that whole building, everything there, we own it, including his sound system, because he's rented and we're paying for that rent inadvertently and paying some of it anyway. But as long as whoever's on that stage owns that until they go off, and then the next guy owns it. And it's up to him to do what that guy says. It's just like, you're working for anybody. You're working for the whole show is who that guy's working for. And it's up to him to do exactly what they tell him to.
So your instructions were that I want to see your hands and feet the whole time?
It's a same guy. You know what that is? No, that was in Pennsylvania, I think it was. And I just told him, I said, what we're going to do is go after the second song. I said, this sound is not right, and we're going to go across the stage, and you turn it up, turn it down like we tell you to. And he did. And I told him, I said, now, I want you to lean back. I want to see both hands and both feet all the, from now till we get done. I don't want you to touch a thing. And so he came back and argued later. That guy did. It was in Pennsylvania is where that one was. He came back and argued later. He said, well, I know how to operate. I said, no, you don't. That's the whole point. You don't know how to operate the sound for everybody that goes on up there because everyone that plays is different. And I said, so you need to get that in your head that you don't understand exactly what, and you know your sound system, yeah, but you don't know those people up there. And so I don't know if he understood it or not. I know the guy, and I knew him too at that time. And I won't call his name, but I know the guy was. There were some good ones out there, though. What was that boy's name? Sutherland? I think his name was very good. I believe his name was Sutherland. The guy that did Norman Adams' shows, oh man. I really liked him too. I can't remember his name, it's been so long. But there were several good ones out there, and several that were just absolutely nothing. And the one that's the Grand Ole Opry, they got probably $1.5 million sound system down there, and they don't have anybody. All the time that I was there from the opening of the new building in 73, I guess it was, they never had anybody that could operate that system. To me, that was good and consistent. One time you go down there and it would be good, and the next time it wouldn't be at all good, just nothing. And I tried to get them to hire Earl Scruggs, in, I don't know, 75 or something like that, 78. And I asked Earl, I said, would you like to be a member of the Opry? And he said, well, no, not really. He said, the sound mix over there is so bad. He said, I really don't, I wouldn't want to be on that.
Really?
So, yeah.
Well, now, why can't they fix that? If it seems to me that'd be easy enough to address. You get somebody who knows what they're doing and put them in the work.
No, I don't know. They don't see it, I guess. The management there doesn't see that or doesn't understand it. And they say, well, we're going out in the area. You know, everything's fine. But it's not. It's not fine. For acoustic music, it's altogether different because they're... You got a banjo playing, and you got a fiddle playing, and a mandolin playing, that you got to turn their volumes up and turn them down, turn them up and turn them down. And those people are used to doing country. Now, doing country is a whole different thing, a complete different setup, with a steel, electric guitar, and piano, and all that. And then you got one vocal, most of the time, one vocal mic. And it's a whole different ballgame.
So do you think then they were hearing their broadcast and they were judging based on the sound going out on the broadcast on the radio maybe too much?
That's all they did. Huh. That's all they did. And you gripe about it, which I did 20 times, I guess, and they wouldn't do anything about it. But we'll take care of it, but they'd never do anything about it. Never.
How much could it cost? I mean, realistically, how much could it cost to get somebody in there to run it correctly? That just blows my mind. That never occurred to me that the Grand Ole Opry would shortchange that important part of the show.
Well, they sure did. I don't know, money-wise, I have no idea. They had this budget they had just followed, I guess. I don't know anything about that end of it. I know the sound, almost everybody complained about the sound. Sometimes it would be good. Sometimes it would be absolutely great, and then you would go down there the next night or the next song you did, and it would be just dead, completely dead, but it was going out over the air. You could hear it. What you hear on from where you play it on the Opry, what you hear is not what goes on the air.
Yeah.
It two different sounds. And you might be going on the air just fine, but in the auditorium, you can't hear anything you're doing. Or sometimes you can hear a song. I tell you what I heard. I think it was Larry Stevenson was on there one night. And, oh no, this was Cubs Record Shop. It's the same difference. That may be the worst sound in the world. But Cubs Record Shop, Larry Stevenson was on there one night. And I thought Larry lost his band. Because I couldn't hear a banjo, and I couldn't hear any vocal, anybody singing with him. I couldn't hear, because they were using multiple mics, and those mics were just off, and I couldn't hear a thing. And I'd say 10 minutes to go in the show, all of a sudden, you could hear the banjo and the fiddle, and you could hear the vocal. And so somebody must have said, hey, you know, you need to get back there and turn this stuff up so people can hear it. And then they turned it off. But, and I was listening on WSN too, so. I don't know. It's just, to get the good sound anymore, the top. But when we worked for Merle Haggard in, 71, 2345, we played some of the biggest venues and to huge crowds, 15 to 20,000 people a night. And he had this guy, what it was on, we called him Captain Feedback.
Captain Feedback?
Feedback. And he was a good, good guy. He was a true sound engineer, and he knew what he was doing. And when you went on that stage, you sounded exactly the same every night. And they'd do a sound check in the afternoon. We'd get to a place like Seattle or Phoenix or wherever, Kansas City, and we do a sound check every night in the afternoon, and you go over your sound, and when you went on, that's how you sounded. And it was, every night was perfect. And it makes the show, because nobody can gripe and complain and moan about anything other than your performance. That's all.
And you think, too, of all of the technical, you know, all the stuff, all the equipment that's out there now, all the high-quality stuff, you would think that even with a little bit of training that the equipment alone would make these problems go away.
Yeah, but it doesn't.
That just blows my mind.
I don't know why. I have no idea. I'm not a sound engineer, so I don't know. I really don't know why. I always said that most, quote, sound engineers, unquote, were little kids. And when they were kids, they would probably went to a little girl's birthday party, and the record player was too loud. They turned it down and said, "Oh my God, he's going to do a fast pitch in there."
Well,
that's where they came from. But anyway. That's
amazing. I just, for some reason, just with all the stuff that you can buy, I'm just thinking that would be the last problem in the world, but you're telling me it still exists.
But now, it is easier now because several of the people are wearing these ear monitors. We just told them to turn the monitors off because they were so bad that you got a false feeling of how you were going out. And we always told them just turn the monitors, turn them completely off. But nowadays, I know Dora uses them, and I imagine most other people, these ear monitors. I know Rhonda Vincent uses them. And supposedly you can hear yourself and everything that's going on a lot better. But I never use them, so I don't know. We just made them turn the monitors off. We never did use them.
Well, I mean, could you play on stage with the monitors off if you were spread out on stage? I'm just wondering how you just knew so well what everyone was doing that you knew what was happening.
Well, if you don't know what you're doing, what are you doing up there?
Well, that's okay. All right. That's true.
And secondly, if you can't hear your fiddle or banjo or mandolin going out over the sound system, you sure as devil can't hear it. You know, what you hear in the monitor then is not real. And you're not playing for yourself. You're playing for those people that paid to get in.
You're
That's what we always looked at anyway. And they would, I think the people appreciated it a lot more. I know the sound guys, they always wanted to run those monitors, and we just always, after a year or two, we always just told them, turn the monitors off, we don't need them. And we didn't. We knew what we were doing. And just like I said before, if you don't know what you're doing, you shouldn't be up there to begin with.
So even in a large venue, you would turn the monitors off?
Oh, yeah. Huh. Yeah, we never used monitors. Never. Never used them. Even when we looked back, if we didn't use monitors.
Again, that's something else I've never, I just can't believe that either. I mean, I believe it, but I'm dumbfounded that it happens.
Well, I tell you what, next time you play somewhere, just have them turn the sound completely off. And play a little bit like that. You don't have to play a whole show like that, but just play a little bit like that. And it's just like playing in your living room, and everybody is forced, you're absolutely forced to play with the band, to be a band member instead of an act up there by yourself. Because as it is, when they're using 12 microphones up there, the dobro player, he's at a mic on his own. It's his show as far as he's concerned. The fiddle player is the same way. They get right in those things. They won't back up. And, you know, one of the best shows, I guess, well balanced that I've ever seen sound wise was Lester Earl in the 50s, and they used one little cheap microphone, and all of them stood around it. And Earl would stand 4 feet from a mic, and Lester would do the same thing with the guitar. Every one of them would stand just like 3 or 4 or 5 feet from the microphone, and you could hear everything just fine. Mm. And then the microphone itself was for nothing but the vocal, and then a little bit of the sound. And people were quiet back then. You go to a show, and they listened. Naturally, you couldn't do this in front of 15,000 people were there. They're going to make noise, and you have to have a sound system that knows what they're doing. And most of the time, you need that. But in a small venue, boy, you turn that down almost off. And in fact, just turn it off. We've played shows like that before, where you just turn the sound system completely off. And it makes a whole world of difference when you're playing. It's just like the whole band is in your living room playing. And it has to be quieter. They can't hear the song.
In the chat room here, there's a guy that that I play music with, and we just played out at a public library here Thursday. And he's asking back, as he's listening to what you say, is once you turn the monitors off, how do you cope with the echo from the main speakers? Or do you?
I don't know. I didn't worry about it.
You just listened to what was happening on stage.
That's all. I just heard what that monitor, whole monitor thing, that didn't exist. I can't remember what year the monitor started showing up, but it just didn't exist at all. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you really mean by the echo.
Well, I think what he's talking about is trying to keep, we were in a fairly big room, but the speakers were really large on the sides of the stage, and I think the sound would bounce back toward the stage as you're playing.
What kind of walls were in the building? Were they like cinder block or something like that?
No, I'd say it's a brand new construction. It's a public library, and I think we were upstairs on the third floor. So I don't know. Whatever they use for interior walls, it just seemed to be pretty bouncy.
A lot of times it will bounce back at you like that. You just have to suck with it. We played the University of Tennessee football homecoming Alabama game in, I don't know, mid-80s sometime. You hear the note, and you could hear it, like, coming back at you three or four times, more even that. Mm-hmm. And with this 180-piece band, the Tennessee band was on the field with us when we played. And we played Tennessee Hound Dog and Rocky Top, which is their fight song at University of Tennessee. And it was hard through that day, but we didn't have any monitors. All we had, we were just standing on the 50-yard line, and against it plain, and we did, and it was just, it was a god-awful mess, I thought. But I talked to people that were in the stands, and there was 105,000 people there, too.
Jeez.
And I talked to people in the stands, and then they said, oh, you sounded fine, kind of good. But all we could hear was Bobby would say, what's up? It's really hard. That was the hardest, I guess.
Well, you just had to play on.
The deal with that technical problem, you just have to pay attention to what you're doing, focus on what you're doing, and listen to what you're doing and how it works with the band, and stay, put the band close together. Don't spread out. Put them close together where everybody can hear what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And you can, just ignore it. Turn it off.
Huh. There you go. Well, listen, man, I'm sorry my phone was acting up, and I'm really glad that you sent me a message that it wasn't. I had to turn it off and reset it just like a computer. It just wasn't taking phone calls then. So
that 5 o'clock, is it?
Say what? It is 5 o'clock, yeah. And so
five
I'm...
Oh, gosh, I thought it was about 4:30 or something like that.
Well, it would have been if I could have answered your phone at 4, because we've only been talking half an hour.
Well, I don't know what happened. I apologize.
No. It was my phone. It was my phone. If you apologize for my problem, I heard what you said. I'm listening.
That'll cost you dinner.
I know. All right. We'll try this again next week. Thanks so much, Sonny.
Oh, yeah. I'll be here.
See you later. All right. See you later.